Welcome back to another deep dive. Today, we're going back in time, back to ancient Jerusalem. We're going to be exploring King Hezekiah's prayer during that Assyrian siege. We'll be using insights from Dr. John Oswald's lectures on the Book of Kings. So just picture this. Assyria, led by King Sennacherib, they're on this huge conquering rampage, and now they're right at Jerusalem's doorstep.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just a military campaign. I mean, the Assyrians, they took pride in destroying the gods of the people they conquered. So Sennacherib, he sees himself as not just a king, but a destroyer of deities.
So it's more than just a physical threat then. It's an attack on their very belief system.
Exactly. And that's what makes Hezekiah's response so fascinating. I mean, Sennacherib, he sends this messenger with a threatening letter. It's essentially saying, your God can't save you. Give up now. Mm. But instead of panicking, Hezekiah goes straight to the temple.
I find it really intriguing that when the Assyrian army unexpectedly withdraws, Hezekiah doesn't celebrate, you know, this apparent victory. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's a really powerful insight into Hezekiah's character and faith. He understands this isn't a true victory. It's just a temporary reprieve. The Assyrians will be back, and he needs to prepare spiritually.
So he heads straight to the temple to pray. And this isn't just a casual, help me out here, God kind of prayer. It's full of powerful imagery and language.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hezekiah uses these incredibly specific names and titles for God. He addresses him as Yahweh, the God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim, God over all the kingdoms of the earth. Each of those phrases is packed with meaning.
Okay, so let's unpack that. What does he achieve by calling on Yahweh, the God of Israel?
He's invoking the covenant, that special relationship between God and his chosen people. It's like Hezekiah is saying, remember your promises, we are your people.
And then there's that striking image of God enthroned between the cherubim. What's the significance of that?
Well, imagine the Ark of the Covenant, this most sacred object in the tabernacle. On top of the Ark are these two golden cherubim, wings outstretched. The space between them represented the very presence of God. So Hezekiah is visualizing God as a king on his throne. And that throne is in Jerusalem.
So Hezekiah is reminding himself and God that their protector is present and powerful. But then he goes even further, calling God, God over all the kingdoms of the earth.
Yeah, that's where this concept of the living God comes in. You know, Dr. Oswald, he uses this great anecdote to illustrate this. He talks about witnessing a God maker in India, literally creating gods out of wet plaster. Some are unfinished, some are painted, all lined up like inventory.
It really makes you think about the difference between a created God and the creator.
Exactly. Sennacherib. He thinks he's conquering gods.
Yeah.
By destroying their statues. But he's just smashing wood and stone. These idols are powerless, lifeless. Yahweh, on the other hand, is the source of all life, the creator of everything.
Which makes Sennacherib's boasting incredibly ironic. It's almost as if he's completely missing the point.
He's entirely focused on earthly power, while Hezekiah is appealing to a power that transcends the physical world. And this raises a vital question. For us, what are we worshiping? The creator or created things, what idols or maybe distractions do we have in our own lives?
That's something to think about. So many things can feel all-consuming. Our work, our possessions, our desire for comfort. We can end up putting our faith in those things rather than in the one true God.
And that's where Hezekiah's example becomes so relevant for us today. We see him facing this overwhelming military threat, but he doesn't panic. Instead, he turns to God with a prayer that demonstrates profound trust and deep understanding of who God really is.
That really challenges me to consider how I react when I'm facing what feels like a Sennacherib situation in my own life. Do I turn to those temporary things, those created things for comfort, or do I go straight to the source of true power and peace?
It's a question we all grapple with. But Hezekiah's example suggests that recognizing those idols and acknowledging their emptiness is the first step to placing our trust in something much greater.
I'm also struck by Hezekiah's unselfish motivation. He's not just praying for his own deliverance or even for Israel's safety. He prays so that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone, Yahweh, are God.
Yes, that's a key point. He wants God's glory to be revealed, not just for his own benefit, but for the sake of the entire world. He's essentially saying, God, use this situation to show everyone who you really are.
That's a pretty radical way to pray, isn't it? It takes the focus off of himself and his immediate circumstances and puts it squarely on God's bigger purpose. I wonder how often I pray like that.
It's a challenge to us, for sure. Are we willing to let God work in our lives, even if it's not comfortable, even if it means stepping aside and letting his power be displayed rather than our own?
This is getting really interesting. What happens next? Does Sennacherib just pack up and go home after this powerful prayer?
Not quite. He sends another messenger with an even more arrogant and blasphemous message, directly mocking Yahweh and comparing him to the powerless gods. Sennacherib is already destroyed. It's a direct attack on everything. Hezekiah holds dear.
So what does Hezekiah do? Does he finally lose it?
He goes back to the temple, and this time, there's an even greater sense of urgency in his prayer. He lays out the situation before God, acknowledging the Assyrians' power and cruelty, but ultimately affirming that Yahweh alone is God.
And then, does God answer this incredibly bold prayer?
Well, what happens next is nothing short of extraordinary. An angel of the Lord goes out and strikes down 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. Sennacherib, completely defeated and humiliated, retreats back to Nineveh.
Wow, that's a pretty dramatic answer to prayer. It sounds like something straight out of a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it's a powerful reminder that God isn't limited by our human understanding of what's possible. He can intervene in ways that defy logic and reason. But I think it's important to note that the miracle itself isn't the main point here.
You're right. It's about the message it sends. It's a public display of God's power and authority.
Exactly. The destruction of the Assyrian army wasn't just about saving Jerusalem. It was about demonstrating to the entire world that Yahweh is the one true God. It was about vindicating Hezekiah's faith and proving Sennacherib's arrogance and blasphemy wrong.
So in a way, this event served as a powerful answer to that question we were discussing earlier. What are we worshiping? The creator or created things?
Precisely. And it also highlights the difference between the kind of power Sennacherib sought, which was based on military might and intimidation, and the power that Hezekiah relied on, which was rooted in humility and dependence on God.
It's almost like Hezekiah's prayer invited God to step into the situation and reveal his true nature, his true power to everyone watching.
Yes, and it completely dismantles Sennacherib's worldview. He thought he was conquering gods, but in reality, he's just smashing statues. He was completely blind to the true source of power in the universe.
I'm curious, though, after such an incredible victory, does Hezekiah let it go to his head? Does he start to think he's got some kind of direct line to God and can do whatever he wants?
Well, there's actually a fascinating episode later in Hezekiah's reign where he does stumble a bit. He shows off his wealth and treasures to envoys from Babylon. It's as if he's momentarily caught up in the trappings of earthly power and forgets the source of his true strength.
So even the most faithful, those who have witnessed God's power firsthand, can still fall prey to human weaknesses.
Absolutely. But what's important is how Hezekiah responds. When the prophet Isaiah confronts him about his actions, he repents. He humbles himself before God, and he acknowledges his need for God's grace.
It's a good reminder that none of us are immune to pride or the temptation to rely on ourselves rather than on God. But it's encouraging to see that even when we mess up, there's always a path back to humility and dependence on God.
And that's a beautiful illustration of what it means to worship the living God. He's not some distant, impersonal force. He's a God who's actively involved in our lives, who sees our struggles, who hears our prayers, and who offers us grace and forgiveness when we stumble.
It makes me think about that part of Hezekiah's prayer, where he says to God, "Give ear, Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, Lord, and see." It's almost as if he's reminding God to pay attention, to be present in the midst of this crisis.
What's so intriguing about that is the way Hezekiah uses the language of the physical senses to describe God's actions. It's a reminder that even though God is spirit, he is not distant or uninvolved. He sees, he hears, he knows what's going on. He's present.
He's not just sitting back and watching things unfold. He's actively engaged in the lives of his people.
Exactly. And this is a theme we see throughout Scripture. God's active presence in the world. He's not some far-off deity who set things in motion and then step back. He's intimately involved in every detail, both the big and the small.
So even when we feel alone, even when we're facing what seem like impossible odds, we can take comfort in knowing that God is right there with us, seeing our struggles, hearing our prayers, and working everything out for our good and his glory.
And that's a truth that can give us incredible courage and hope, no matter what Sennacherib we might be facing in our own lives.
It's easy to get discouraged when we look around at the state of the world with all the conflicts, the injustices, the suffering. But Hezekiah's story reminds us that God is still on his throne. He's still in control, and he's still in the business of intervening in human history.
And that's not just some ancient story from a dusty history book. It's a living, breathing reality that has implications for our lives today, just as Hezekiah prayed, for God's glory to be revealed. In his situation, we can pray for the same thing in our own lives.
We can ask God to show himself strong on our behalf, to work through us in ways that defy human logic, and demonstrate his power to those around us.
And that's an exciting prospect, isn't it? It means that our lives, even in the midst of our everyday struggles, can become a canvas on which God paints his glory for the world to see.
I love that image. It's a powerful reminder that we're not just passive bystanders in God's story. We have a role to play, and he invites us to participate in his work of redeeming the world.
And that participation doesn't always require grand gestures or heroic feats. Sometimes it's simply a matter of trusting God in the small things, of acknowledging our need for him, and of allowing his power to work through our weaknesses.
It's about surrendering our desire for control and embracing the freedom that comes from knowing that we're not in this alone.
And that surrender, that act of humble trust, can be the most powerful weapon we have against the Sennacheribs that threaten to overwhelm us.
So as we continue to explore Hezekiah's story, I'm wondering, what are some of the practical ways we can cultivate that kind of surrender in our own lives? How do we move from simply knowing about God's power to actually experiencing it in a tangible way?
That's a great question. And it's something I think we all grapple with. One thing that strikes me about Hezekiah's example is his willingness to be completely honest with God. In prayer, he doesn't hold back his fears, his doubts, his frustrations.
He lays it all out on the table, so to speak. He doesn't try to pretend he's got it all together.
Exactly. And I think there's something incredibly powerful about that kind of vulnerability before God. It allows us to tap into a level of intimacy and authenticity in our relationship with him. That simply isn't possible when we're trying to present a polished facade.
It's about dropping the mask, so to speak, and coming to God just as we are. Brokenness and all.
And in that space, vulnerability, that's where we often experience God's power most profoundly. It's not about having all the answers or figuring everything out on our own.
Yeah.
It's like acknowledging our need for him and allowing him to fill us with his strength and wisdom.
It reminds me of that verse in 2 Corinthians where Paul says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." It's in our moments of weakness, when we let go of our own striving and rely on God's grace, that we truly experience his transformative power.
And that's a powerful antidote to the kind of worldly power that Sennacherib was obsessed with. His power was based on control, on domination, on forcing others to submit to his will. But God's power is different. It's a power that flows through surrender, through humility, through recognizing our own limitations, and allowing God to work through us.
So if we want to experience that kind of power in our own lives, the kind of power that can move mountains and transform hearts, it starts with letting go of our own ego, our own need to be in control.
It's about embracing the paradox that true strength is found in weakness, true freedom is found in surrender, and true power is found in dependence on the one who holds the universe in his hands.
That's a beautiful thought, and it's a great reminder that we're not meant to go through life carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders.
We're meant to walk in partnership with God, allowing him to guide our steps, to equip us for the journey, and to empower us to live lives that reflect his glory.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive into Hezekiah's story, I'm wondering, what's one practical step our listeners can take today to begin cultivating that kind of surrender and dependence on God in their own lives?
That's a great question. I think it's simple. But powerful practice is to spend a few minutes each day reflecting on our own Sennacheribs. What are the things in our lives that are causing us anxiety, fear, or a sense of overwhelm?
The things that tempt us
to
rely on our own strength rather than God's.
Exactly. Once we've identified those things, we can bring them to God in prayer, acknowledging our own limitations and asking for his guidance and intervention.
It's about shifting our focus from our own problem-solving abilities to God's limitless power and wisdom.
And as we do that consistently, we'll begin to see God work in ways we never thought possible.
It's about letting go of the illusion of control and embracing the reality that we're held in the palm of God's hand, even when we can't see it or feel it.
And in that place of surrender, we'll find true peace, true strength, and true freedom.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've been unpacking this really intense moment in history with King Hezekiah, you know, facing down that Assyrian threat. And it's a story packed with military action. But the real drama is happening on a spiritual level, right?
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Oswald, he brings up this fascinating point about how Hezekiah's prayer It's like it throws down a challenge, not just to Sennacherib, but to all of us.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What's the challenge?
It's about, you know, what kind of power we're seeking in our own lives.
Mm.
Are we trying to build our own little kingdoms, relying on our own strength and cleverness?
Yeah.
Or are we willing to say, God, you're in charge. I need your wisdom and guidance.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in the hustle, to think we have to control everything. But Hezekiah's example shows a different way.
Right. His power comes from a completely different source. Humility, dependence on a God who's bigger than any earthly threat. And that's the kind of power that ultimately triumphs.
So how do we apply this ancient story to our modern lives, it feels like? There's a lot to unpack here.
Well, it's about recognizing the Sennacheribs we face. Maybe not literal armies. Those things that make us feel overwhelmed, powerless, tempted to give up. It could be a health crisis, a job loss, relationship struggles.
Or even just that constant pressure to succeed, you know, by the world's standards, which can feel pretty crushing.
Exactly. And instead of getting swept up in the panic, what if we took a page from Hezekiah's playbook? What would it look like to bring those fears, anxieties, those Sennacheribs before God?
And it makes me think about how Hezekiah spread that threatening letter out before the Lord. It's such a vivid image of radical honesty, just laying it all out there, no matter how big or scary the problem might seem.
And that's the starting point, isn't it? That raw honesty opens the door for God to work. It's acknowledging our need for him, not trying to muscle through things on our own.
It's like saying, okay, God, I can't handle this alone. I need your help.
And that act of surrender, that's where true strength is found. It's letting go of the illusion of control and embracing the reality that we're held in the palm of God's hand, even when we can't see it or feel it.
So what's one practical step our listeners can take today to start cultivating this kind of surrender?
How about this? Tonight, before you go to sleep, take a few moments to reflect. What are your Sennacheribs? What's been stealing your peace or making you feel powerless? Write them down, even if it's just a quick note on your phone.
So making it tangible, not just letting those worries swirl around in our heads.
Right. And spend a few minutes talking to God about them, honestly, openly, without trying to sugarcoat things, and ask for his guidance, his strength, his peace to carry you through.
It's like we're handing over those burdens, those Sennacheribs, to the one who's actually capable of handling them.
Precisely. And even if the answer isn't immediate or what we expect, that act of surrender itself is a powerful step. It's a declaration that we're not in this alone, that we have a God who cares and who's working things out for our good.
This has been such an insightful deep dive. I feel like we've gone beyond just knowing the story of Hezekiah's prayer and tapped into some really profound truths about the nature of faith and where true power comes from.
And that's the beauty of diving deep into these ancient texts, isn't it? They have a way of speaking to us across the centuries, offering wisdom and guidance for our modern lives.
So as we wrap up, I want to thank you for joining us on this journey back to ancient Jerusalem. We hope you've been inspired by Hezekiah's courage and his unwavering trust in the living God.
And remember, no matter what Sennacheribs you're facing today, know that you're not alone. The God who heard Hezekiah's prayer is still listening, still acting, still inviting you to surrender your fears and anxieties to him and experience his incredible power at work in your life.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.